51551 is our text number. Lots of texts coming in. Somebody asked the interesting question, Patrick Irwin, how is Germany marking the centenary of the First World War? I'm not entirely certain, but I'm sure they're not going to be spending £60 million on it, as is the British government. And somebody from Enniscorthy says Hitler's brother married a Wexford woman. And that apparently, I have to say, I was sceptical, but apparently that is the case. And somebody else says it's important not to change the names of the concentration camps. If you weren't listening to the interview earlier, I wondered why the names of places like Dachau in Germany, where the Germans hadn't chosen to actually change the names. I wasn't suggesting that it was a good idea, but wondering why it hadn't happened. But our texter says it remains the world of man's inhumanity to his own kind. The German people should not feel guilty for what their leaders of the past have done. Today, the world leaders stand by and let millions of men, women and children starve to death and don't even bat an eyelid. Mankind still has a lot to learn.
This man was responsible for the death of up to a million people in Nazi-controlled Croatia. It was one of the worst atrocities of the ethnic cleansing in World War II. His name, Andrea Artukovic, Nazi Minister of the Interior in Croatia. He arrived in Ireland in July 1947.
Clip there from Ireland's Nazis, Cathal O'Shannon's award-winning documentary on alleged war criminals who came to Ireland in various ways after 1945. Most significant was the man he mentioned, Andrea Artukovic, the former interior minister of the Ustasha-run Nazi puppet state in Croatia during World War II. He landed here in 1947. There remain major questions as to how Artukovic made it to Ireland from Switzerland and how he stayed here unnoticed for a year. Recently declassified Swiss and Irish files add a whole new dimension to the story. And historian Michael Kennedy of the Royal Irish Academy has been researching these files and joins me now. First of all, just give us an idea of Artukovic's activities during the Second World War and who the Ustasha, who they were.
Well, the Ustasha ran the Nazi puppet state of independent Croatia during the Second World War. And Artukovic was the Minister for the Interior. A CIA report called him the head of the Croatian Gestapo. And if your listeners remember the wars in Yugoslavia during the 1990s, the atrocities that were perpetrated there, similar during the Second World War in the independent state of Croatia, it was a kind of clerico-fascist state. The Catholic Church supported the regime of Ante Pavlovich. The Franciscan Order were very much involved in the deeds undertaken by the regime. And these included, I mean, figures vary, but they're huge, between 300,000 and 500,000 people killed, and many of this figure due to Artukovic himself. There were forced conversions, Muslims converted to Catholicism and then killed. There were atrocities of absolutely appalling character, mass killings, slaughtering of the most obscene and inhuman kind. So it was an appalling state of affairs what went on there. And it was very little was known about it, certainly in Ireland during the war. And that's, I think, one of the reasons why Artukovic found it so easy to get into Ireland.
What was the status of Ireland as a transit area for former Nazis? Cathal O'Shannon had one thesis, but I think that the influential Simon Wiesenthal Institute wouldn't necessarily agree with that.
That's right. Cathal O'Shannon had very strong views in Ireland's Nazis. He had very deep suspicions, but they haven't always been borne out by the history, by the subsequent files that O'Shannon didn't have access to. There were some considerable flaws in the programme, but I think it told us a lot more about Cathal O'Shannon's views about himself during his own Second World War. Ireland was seen by a number of individuals who wished to flee Europe as being a possible safe haven, as an easy point of access. And the Irish authorities were very aware of this. The Department of External Affairs were very concerned that the Gardaí and the Department of Justice didn't have adequate safeguards in place for individuals who wished to get into Ireland to get through, that there might be lapse or lacking in the checking of passports, and that identity papers wouldn't always be looked at as closely as they might need to be.
So we weren't particularly good good at vetting and keeping out Nazis. A few slipped through. A number slipped through.
I spoke to my Dutch and my Swiss colleagues about Artukovich and about another individual, Willy Sassen, and what they came out with was a very similar story. So O'Shannon tended to see the Irish case kind of in isolation, but I think we've got to be aware of the vast numbers of people moving across the continent and the lapses in bureaucracy across the continent.
Okay, lapses and incompetence are one thing, but is there any evidence, have you come across any evidence of sympathy, an element of sympathy on the part of Irish officialdom or any people in Irish officialdom for Nazis on their way perhaps to elsewhere, to South America, for example?
In the Artukovich case, no. And that's more a cock-up than a conspiracy. O'Shannon suggested conspiracy, but he didn't have access to the files that have now been released. In other cases, you do see a degree of Ireland distancing itself, sometimes through ignorance and sometimes through saying that we're not going to follow an allied agenda on this, that David Gray, the very unpopular American minister in Dublin, would now and again make appeals to De Valera saying, you must look out for so-and-so, so-and-so, and so-and-so. So, no, we're not going to do that. We will allow into Ireland those people we want to, but we will allow them in on our own interests, on our own agendas. So the sympathy that's there can be read into that. And there are those who say, well, such and such a person fought on the German side against the Soviets or fought whatever, but that was in the past and that wasn't our war. Mm. You know, be that as it may, we're dealing with a new world system now post-1945 and that's the reality of the system.
Do we have any idea how many Nazis chose to stay in Ireland for any length of time?
We don't. I mean, O'Shannon said 150 passed through, 150 lived here. Simon Wiesenthal, as you quoted, said nobody of any great significance. I think if when you're looking at names, you come up with figures between half a dozen and a dozen. And it does assume something, if I could call it like a witch hunt. You mentioned this to individuals and people say, oh, so-and-so and so-and-so, this person, that person. But it never really comes out. We haven't been able to get a definite figure yet, other than maybe half a dozen. I mean, Otto Skorzeny, who ended up in Ireland, although he wasn't allowed to reside here in the 1950s and 1960s. Hitler's favourite commander would be one of the most popular names. Oswald Mosley lived in Ireland for a short while. Then Willy Sassen, who I mentioned. Various others, but they're all relatively low-key figures.
And were there demands from the Allies for the extradition of possible war criminals from Ireland at any point?
Not that I'm aware of now off the top of my head. It was more a problem for us about how Ireland dealt with the individuals who came to Ireland. And that's where Artukovich is a real problem, because he tricked his way into Ireland very clearly. There was no conspiracy on the part of the Irish state to allow him in. If there was any conspiracy, it was on the part of the Swiss authorities to provide him with an identity, which the Irish authorities naively believed his profile as the uncle of a Catholic priest who was also fleeing communist Yugoslavia. And it was the priest who got their attention rather than his uncle.
And you've just put your finger on a hugely complicating factor, the Cold War, fugitives from communism in Eastern Europe and Irish sympathy for that phenomenon as opposed to Nazism.
Yes, I think it's the current situation that the state finds itself in the late 40s and the early 50s, rather than the previous decade and the previous events of the Second World War that are seen of being important. But also it's a naive, trusting bureaucracy who are willing to accept individuals at face value. And particularly in 1946 and 47, the case of Cardinal Stepanac, the Archbishop of Zagreb, he was put on a show trial basically by the Tito authorities. And so Yugoslav Catholics were seen with the degree of, I suppose, they were welcomed into Ireland if they could possibly get here. And the Stepanac case was the background to Artukovich making his way into the country. The individuals in the Department of Justice and the Department of External Affairs who stamped the visa applications saw Artukovich, who was going under, I should say, the name of Anic, Alois Anic. He never applied using the name Artukovich into Ireland. We were totally taken by that false application, a false name given by the Swiss authorities. And it was only in later years, certainly through the 1950s, the Irish ambassador in Washington was told the guy you let in as Alois Anic was, in fact, Andrea Artukovich. And then the alarm signals go off in Ivy House and say, do not let him back into Ireland. Right. He tricked his way in.
But there was another complication in that apparently the Vatican was offering asylum to former Ustasha.
The Vatican had considerable links with the independent state of Croatia. And after the war, Ustasha were secreted out of Croatia and they were put up in various religious houses around the Vatican in Rome. And the College of St. Jerome in Rome, a Franciscan college, gave succour to a number of ex-Ustasha. And they came to the attention of the Irish diplomats of the Holy See, the Irish minister to the Vatican, Tommy Kiernan. They looked for exile in Ireland. And Kiernan reported to Dublin, now this is before Artukovich came into the country, Kiernan reported to Dublin saying that you don't know what you're dealing with these people. They're a thoroughly bad lot. They're war criminals. And he later reported that I think the head of the Franciscans in that particular college was himself a war criminal and Dublin needed to beware. But by the time Artukovich or Anich ended up on Irish shores, Kiernan was in Australia and the individuals who dealt with that case had been dispersed around.
And what was his ultimate fate? He was in Ireland for a year, then he went to the USA.
He was in Ireland for a year. He lived in Rathgar very quietly. And it was the priest who came with him, Father Ivandich, who attracted most of the attention. He went off and he studied in Galway. And he was later spirited out of the country by the Canadians. Again, it's, you know, there's elements of John le Carré to this. It was rather suspicious. He gets Artukovich in and then he's taken out. Artukovich goes to America in 1950. He tricks his way into getting a tourist visa. He gets Irish certificates of identity for himself and his wife and his family. A child of his is born in Dublin. And he's in the United States until the 1980s when he's extradited and he dies in Zagreb in 1988. He's up for execution in Zagreb, but he's too ill and eventually dies in prison.
Michael Kennedy, thank you for joining us and telling us that story this evening. More information about Artukovich's story in the declassified files can be found on our website with a piece written by Michael about his research. Before I go, I want to mention a conference in the National Museum in Collins Barracks this coming Saturday, which will look at how Europe has remembered and commemorated the First World War in the last 100 years. Full details, again, on our website. And while you're there, you can podcast this week's programme. Next Sunday, among other things, we'll be asking whether Countess Markievicz is an overrated icon of Irish history. Until then, from me, Miles Dungan, and from producer Yeti Redmond, goodbye and thanks for listening.